This is an ABC podcast.
Good morning and welcome to Pacific Beat on ABC Radio Australia this Friday morning. I'm Marla Damati. On the show, Papua New Guinea's former Prime Minister Peter O'Neill's corruption probe finally has a verdict. What is the outcome? You'll find out shortly. Also, while the PNG men's cricket team prepare for their debut at the men's T20, the team has been struck by tragedy. That story coming up in 35 minutes. And what does the Brisbane Olympics and 2032 mean for Pacific athletes? Will it mean more chances, more opportunities, perhaps? Well, hopefully you'll have an answer coming up on the show. And of course, we have Friday Forum, so stick around for that. But next, what does the Pacific think of the news that Australia will stop domestic production of the AstraZeneca vaccine? You'll find out next.
You're listening to Pacific Beat on ABC Radio Australia.
Aid groups and opposition politicians in Australia are sounding the alarm over the news that the Australian-made AstraZeneca COVID-19 vaccine will stop being manufactured in 2022. The Australian government has confirmed it isn't renewing its contract with biotech giant CSL beyond the 51 million doses the company has already promised to deliver. While demand for AstraZeneca has been low in Australia, it is the backbone of the federal government's effort to vaccinate Pacific countries. But in the region, there doesn't appear to be much concern that the production of the Australian-made AstraZeneca vaccine will wrap up next year. Reporter Liam Fox is across all the details. Liam, the announcement of the end of the production, it came out of the blue.
Yes, that's right. Nine News reported on Wednesday night that CSL's production would cease this year, but provided few other details. Yesterday, the Health Minister, Greg Hunt, clarified production will cease, but only after the current contract for 51 million doses is finalised. He was asked about what the development means for Australia's provision of AstraZeneca vaccines to the Pacific and Southeast Asian countries. He says it will continue, as will Australia's support of the COVAX facility. Here's a little of what he had to say.
The contract is being delivered in full. The doses are being shared, but it was only ever one of the methods, and it was never contemplated that CSL would become a contract manufacturer for others. And so we have a strong, clear, ongoing commitment to the region. Of all the countries in the world, we've been one of the most generous and most focused because it's the right thing to do.
Now, according to CSL, the company has produced 20 of the 51 million doses under the contract, so there's around 30 million more to come. The announcement prompted concerned responses in Australia from the opposition and some NGOs. The Shadow Foreign Minister, Penny Wong, said it was bewildering and short-sighted, and she called on the government to ramp up production beyond the current contract to send more doses around the region. The End COVID for All campaign said the government should invest in domestic capability to produce 50 to 100 million vaccine doses to sell at cost to Southeast Asia.
And what's been the reaction in the Pacific to this announcement?
Well, as you mentioned, Australian-produced AstraZeneca has been sent around the region. In particular, it's played a big role in Fiji's successful vaccination campaign, where more than 80% of people are fully vaccinated. A few people in the health space expressed alarm at the initial report that AstraZeneca production would cease in Australia. That was before the situation was clarified that 50 million doses would still be produced in total. We asked several health ministers what they thought. The Solomon Islands Health Minister, Colwick Togomana, got back to us via text message and said that his country should be able to cover the target eligible population thanks to vaccines supplied by Australia and other countries, and that his country was grateful to Australia for its generous supply of doses. PNG's Health Minister Jelta Wong also got in touch via text and said that his country had not been officially informed about the government's plans for the CSL contract, but he was confident Australia would continue to provide vaccines to PNG, whether manufactured in Australia or purchased internationally. He said it's a strong commitment and understanding that we have with the Australian government. So from those two, at least, there does not appear to be the same sense of alarm and concern at the end of AstraZeneca production that we're seeing from some quarters in Australia.
Liam Fox, thank you. That was Liam Fox reporting there.
Pacific Beat.
Papua New Guinea's former Prime Minister Peter O'Neill says his not guilty verdict in a corruption case has brought an end to what he's called a two-year political witch hunt. The verdict in his case was handed down late yesterday in Port Moresby, and our PNG correspondent Natalie Whiting was in court for the verdict.
Former PNG Prime Minister and current Member of Parliament Peter O'Neill was facing one charge of abuse of office after an investigation into the procurement of 50 million kina, or about 20 million Australian dollars, for the purchase of two diesel generators from Israel in 2013 to provide backup power here in PNG. Police alleged Mr. O'Neill directed payments for the purchase of the generators without proper consideration for procurement processes and without approval. But the judge found the state failed to prove there was any abuse of authority by Mr. O'Neill and said the money was used for a legitimate public purpose.
This political witch hunt that has been going on relentlessly for 2 years has come to an end now. I know that there is a desire by my opponents that I don't go for the coming elections, but I can assure you that I will be there. If they want me out of politics, they have to beat me at the elections.
PNG will hold national elections next year.
That's our PNG correspondent Natalie Whiting in Port Moresby. Time to find out some of the other stories and the headlines around the Pacific, and we're joined by Catherine Grau this morning. Good morning, Catherine.
Good morning, Marla.
We are heading to Vanuatu first because there's been a breach in the country's quarantine system.
Yeah, that's right. But it's not a breach by an individual perhaps staying in hotel quarantine doing the wrong thing, which is certainly something we've seen during this pandemic happen here in Australia and Fiji too. We know that's really what started their COVID wave this year. This particular breach relates to decisions made kind of higher up, and it relates to the number of people who are actually able to be in hotel quarantine at any one time. Now, the Ministry of Health in Vanuatu set that limit, that cap at 120, and that was to meet the province's ability to really be able to safely manage people coming in, given that the Health Ministry's resources are already stretched at the moment. They're busy doing the vaccine rollout, and of course they just need to also be able to manage normal service delivery. So they decided that 120 was the number of people they could have in hotel quarantine at any one time. But the Vanuatu Daily Post newspaper is reporting that some extra flights apparently have come in, and they had 170 people in quarantine at one time. And apparently the health authorities weren't made aware of these extra flights until the very last minute. The article in the Daily Post reports or quotes the director of public health in Vanuatu, Dr. Len Taravonda, saying that in his opinion, this is a breach of both policies and protocols. He's obviously very disappointed, but does say that the number of people in hotel quarantine at the moment has decreased just a little bit. Some people have been able to be released, I would assume, although the details weren't in the article, that they had spent their time in quarantine. But certainly they're going to want to make sure they've got everything in order, because the next repatriation flight, which will be bringing seasonal workers back from Australia and also New Zealand, is set for October 28th, Marla.
And now we're heading to Samoa, because Samoa's former Prime Minister claims he and other opposition MPs aren't getting paid.
Yeah, Samoa Observer newspaper has this particular story, and they say that Tuila Epa Saleli Malialenga Oi, who's now, of course, the opposition leader in Samoa, but of course was a prime minister for such a long time, more than 20 years, he's claiming that he and his other MPs in his Human Rights Protection Party are yet to receive a cent of their salary after they were sworn into parliament basically a month ago. He's accusing the government, led by the FAST party, of withholding the opposition opposition MPs' wages. And also interesting in this article, he also appears to be trying to claim that seven MPs who all come from his party as well, whose seats actually have to be recontested at some by-elections next month because of the election petitions, the results of those. He's also saying that those seven MPs haven't been paid and they should be as well, which is an interesting situation. But the Samoa Observer newspaper is reporting it is trying to get comment from the country's finance minister to respond to these accusations that the government's actually withholding these wages. They've had no luck so far. So something to watch as well and to work out exactly what's going on there.
Something to definitely keep an eye on. But Catherine, let's finish with a little bit of sports news and you can bring us some updates on signings.
Yeah, so we'll start with the Ekale Tahi. That's Tonga's national rugby union team. Their squad has been named for their Northern Hemisphere tour that's going to kick off in coming weeks over in Europe. Coach Totai Kefu has named his lineup, although it's interesting, the Matangi Tonga newspaper is reporting that he, as coach, won't actually be joining them for this tour in the Northern Hemisphere because, of course, people might remember there was that violent home invasion at his home where he and his family were actually left in hospital. So they're still recovering from that. So he won't be there, but he's named his squad. It's got 40 players and it features players from 10 different countries. There's a mix of young and new players as well. And apparently they're all very excited about that. And over in Super Rugby news, Moana Pacifica, which of course is one of the two new Pacific teams that are going to be in the Super Rugby competition next year, has named its first major signing. And it's the former Wallabies player, Christian Leali Ifano. The team announced it yesterday. They called him one of the most sought-after rugby talents in trans-Tasman professional rugby. So that's a very big call. The 34-year-old was actually born in New Zealand, but he's been raised in Australia, obviously playing for the Wallabies. The plans are that he'll move to New Zealand in the coming months and join the team there because, of course, Moana Pacifica will be based there for the competition. Now, he signed on with them for just the 2022 season so far, but apparently there is the option for him to extend as well. So I reckon that might have got some fans pretty excited.
Big news there. Catherine, thank you so much for bringing us those stories.
My pleasure.
Pacific Beat. The Brisbane Olympics might be more than a decade away, but planning has already started. And one person who already has her thinking cap on is Avita Rapila. She is the Secretary General of the Papua New Guinea Olympic Committee and was recently appointed to the IOC Coordination Commission for Brisbane 2032. Avita joins me now to talk about her role and her hopes of PNG and the Pacific at the Brisbane Games. Gupla morning, Avita. Thank you so much for joining the program.
Good morning. Thank you for having me on the show.
Well, firstly, congratulations for your appointment. Tell me about this role. What exactly will you be doing in the IOC Coordination Commission?
Well, as a part of the IOC Coordination Commission for Brisbane 2032, the role of the Coordination Commission is to monitor the progress of planning and organisation of the Games and provide guidance to the organising committee. And we will also be required to do on-site inspections of competition, training venues and other facilities. And also with the responsibility of reporting back to the IOC Executive Board on the status of the preparations of the Olympic Games. So that pretty much is the role of the Coordination Commission as defined in the Olympic Charter.
That is a great snapshot of the hat that you're going to wear, you know, coming up in, you know, the next 10 years in preparation for Brisbane. But as a representative for a Pacific country in this commission, what will you be hoping to achieve for both, you know, PNG and the Pacific as a whole?
Well, you know, we'd like to view Brisbane 22 as a home games for us. Not all of us in the Pacific will have the opportunity to host an Olympic game. So just like the Sydney 2000 Olympics, Brisbane 2032 will definitely be a home games. And we're all excited with the opportunities that it presents and being a big catalyst for the growth and development of sport in the Pacific. It's a great opportunity for us to see as many Pacific athletes and teams qualify on merit and participate in the games. with the exception of Australia and New Zealand in the region and Fiji and Tonga, who have won Olympic medals, the rest of the Pacific, we've yet to win our Olympic medals. And PNG, and I'm sure with all the other Pacific countries, we still hold the vision to win our first ever Olympic medal. And we'd like to see our athletes and families and friends celebrate medals in Brisbane 2032. So there is a lot that we'd we'd like to work towards. And obviously 11 years is a long way to the games, but it provides an opportunity for long-term athlete development.
And being in this position, you know, what more can be done or what needs to be done for Pacific athletes, both, you know, in competition at the games, but also in improving Pacific sports and sporting outcomes in the future, both on and off the field as well?
Well, look, there's a lot of things that, there's a lot of things that we in the Pacific, we still lack. Most of the Pacific countries lack the infrastructure as well as the expertise in high performance and the programs and services. We're fortunate that, you know, we've got some good programs in place, such as the Oceania Sport Education Programs to upskill and train our coaches and technical officials and administrators. Obviously, we would have to work with international federations for sport-specific qualification of coaches and technical officials. And so there is opportunities there for us to work on strengthening our national sports systems. And that would obviously require each of our National Olympic Committees working with our government, the government as our key partner and various partners. We've had the Papua New Guinea, we were very fortunate. We had support from the Australian government through the Pacific All Sport Program and preparing our athletes for the Tokyo Olympics. We also had support through the Australian Olympic Committee as well, and we're grateful for that support. So there is a lot of work that would still need to take place. And obviously, you know, just the same experience from Sydney 2000, we'd like to see that, you know, that there will be athletes and coaches scholarships with some expertise that can also help build capacity in country as well with sports science, sports medicine. So there is a whole range of programs and services that we need to be able to support our athletes for the games.
Now, we saw the impact COVID-19 had on logistics for a lot of Pacific teams, you know, some of them not being able to make the Tokyo Olympics. So, you know, what lessons do you think can be learnt from that event? And will it being in the region mean more opportunities for Pacific athletes getting to the games and being able to compete?
Yes. Look, one of the lessons from the Tokyo Games was when the world closed its borders, a lot of our athletes, or most of our athletes, were denied the opportunity to travel abroad and be based with their high performance coaches and the lead up competitions. And we had to look inward, and looking inward meant that we had to rely on the resources that we have in country and the expertise. And so that was a challenge in itself. Especially when our athletes couldn't have access to, a sports psychologist, a sports nutritionist, their high performance coaches. We have a high performance center here, it's not at a level that's required for our athletes' preparations, especially right at the Olympic level. We have good trainers and strength and conditioning coaches. We need to build that capacity as well in country with our own performance, high performance programs and services. And that's something that we'd like to see. As it is a focus as well for us, so that we can rely on our resources in country as well. And the other thing as well, in terms of some of the lessons from Tokyo, was the fact that, you know, we had to be as flexible as possible and adapt and make changes to some of our plans. And that was something that, you know, we had to do. And obviously, these are things that, especially the mental health and preparations for our athletes as well.
Finally, Avita, on a separate note, the Commonwealth Games Federation has opened the door for joint hosting from 2026 and beyond. What do you think about a potential joint Pacific bid in the future? You know, as one possibility, perhaps PNG and Fiji could join forces. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Wouldn't that be fantastic?
It'd be so fantastic.
I know. And look, Fiji, Papua New Guinea, we have great facilities as well. We have infrastructure as well, and which also brings to mind that one of the things I wanted to say was Brisbane 2032 also provides an opportunity for us to even offer our facilities, our infrastructure as pre-games training venues for the games. And so definitely, you know, we have some infrastructure here that that we would be you know, happy to host where the opportunities exist.
Well, Avita, no doubt at all, a lot of people around the region are incredibly excited for 2032. We've got a couple steps along the way, but no doubt it'll be a fantastic Olympics for the region. So thank you, True, for joining the program and for chatting to me.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on the program.
That was Avita Rapila, Secretary General of the Papua New Guinea Olympic Committee. Now to the all-important weather forecast. And we're not just talking about the weather this weekend, because we've also got details on potentially how many cyclones might hit the Pacific this season. Of course, we're joined by Neville Coop, the director of Nandraki Weather. Good morning to you, Neville.
Hi, Marlo.
Let's start with the weather on the weekend. How is the weather in the region looking today and into the next couple of days?
Yeah, it's still pretty settled right across most parts of the Pacific at the moment. We have a big high pressure sitting over New Zealand. There is a weak frontal system. It's bringing a few thundery showers perhaps to Fiji and maybe to the southern islands of Tonga, Nuku'alofa and Tongatapu. But elsewhere, it's looking pretty bright and clear. The only other area of any significant weather is up around the Tuvalu Islands to the north of Fiji, close to the equator, where we do have a scattering of thunderstorms at the moment, and they're going to linger as well, as we have a very slow-moving weather pattern right now. So looks pretty good for most.
That is good news. But of course, as we are heading towards, you know, spring, we are heading towards the cyclone season for the Pacific. Neville, do you have any information on what it might look like, or what connections there are in terms of the weather systems in the next couple of months?
Yeah, sure. So a couple of things have happened over the course of this week, which are of significance to the Pacific region. First of all, on the broader scale, the Bureau of Meteorology in Australia has now come on board to the same message that our colleagues south of Fiji here in New Zealand at Niwa have been saying, which is that the risk of a significant La Nina this coming summer is increasing. And so the Bureau is up there. Outlook for the coming spring and early part of summer to La Nina warning, and that matches the message now from New Zealand. So it does seem very likely we're going to have a La Nina event this summer, and that's going to be the overall control, if you like, then, of what happens through the summer months. And La Nina typically brings wetter and more frequent cyclones to the western Pacific, basically from the dateline across to the Coral Sea, affecting Fiji, Vanuatu, New Caledonia, the Solomons and Papua New Guinea and other islands In the Coral Sea. Further east you go, then weather should be much more settled, and the risk of any adverse weather and certainly the rainfall will stay below average about Polynesia. So that's the general outlook. And with that La Nina event slowly developing now, we're going to see a season that's going to be quite familiar, because it's going to look a lot like last summer. So that means that the tropical cyclone activity is going to be confined basically to a box, if you like, from the islands of Papua New Guinea and the Solomons across to Tuvalu, down the dateline, affecting Fiji, perhaps southern parts of Tonga, and then encompassing New Caledonia and Vanuatu as well, and also significantly elevated risk for the North Island of New Zealand. So those places are going to see increased tropical cyclone activity based on the seasonal average, while the east around Polynesia is, we already mentioned, is going to stay relatively dry. It's also going to stay relatively less likely to see tropical cyclones. So both the Fiji Met Service have issued a TC outlook, and so has the Island Climate Update folks down in New Zealand at NIWA. And if you want to go and have a look at those, you can go to their respective websites. That's met.gov.fj and to niwa.co.nz. Or everything's up on our Nundaraki Facebook page. You can find links to those, both of those documents there. So it's only 2 weeks away till the start of the cyclone season. So we do encourage everyone to get prepared and be ready for perhaps, like last year, we saw a relatively early start to the cyclone season with possible activity in November and early parts of December.
A good reminder there, Neville, that it is, you know, time to kind of keep vigilant, keep watch, and make sure you are heading into the season prepared. But Neville, thank you so much for giving us the weather outlook and also an update of the cyclone season as well.
You're welcome. Have a good weekend.
You too. That was Neville Coop, the director of Nundaraki Weather. And as he said, if you want any weather updates, including an update about the cyclone season, you can head on to Facebook and type in Nundaraki Weather.
The Friday Forum. Two guests, three rules. Rule one, tell us a story that made you angry.
The crisis of governance in PNG's power sector made me feel very disappointed for the many people in Papua New Guinea who have no electricity.
Rule two, what story this week made you feel good?
The Melbourne Rebel teams were able to, first of all, fly out of Victoria, which is grand, and had our first match against the Brumbies.
And rule three, let's lighten up on a Friday. What story made you laugh?
This story couldn't help but make me laugh. Parliament here brought in special sort of new dress code, and they call it Kia Orana Fridays. Women wearing Rito hats, the men wearing island shirts. There's lots of fresh flower A's.
I would love to come and just smell Parliament, because you've made it sound like it smells divine in their fresh florals.
The Friday Forum on Pacific Beat on ABC Radio Australia.
Stick around, because the Friday Forum is coming up shortly. But first, Papua New Guinea is set to make history when it plays its first ever match in the Men's T20 Cricket World Cup this weekend, taking on host nation Oman. But the build-up has been marred by tragedy, with three of the players suffering the sudden loss of a parent back home in PNG in the space of just 48 hours. Two of the players, all-rounder CJ Amani and fast bowler Nosino Pokana, were given compassionate leave from the team, meaning they didn't play in the two recent warm-up matches. But as the only wicketkeeper in the squad, Kipling Doriga had to keep going. The Barramundi's coach Carl Sandry says the team's focus is on making an impact, but as he told Richard Hewitt, it's been an emotional time for everyone.
For me, it's not in the coaching manual that you have to address such things on a tour like that within the space of 2 days. And you know, it was a challenge for me to have to be there and inform players of that news, given how excited everyone was about the whole tour. But the players, the support staff have been really good with those three players. And as you'd expect, we're a strong family connection here within the group. And those players had their time and their space to grieve. And I think we compartmentalized it quite well. when we're at cricket, everyone was still focused on the cricket and doing what we needed to do as best as we could. But we've moved on now. Everyone is back on board and focused. We know that's still in the background and not easy, but those players have been really good and the vibe and mood around the group is very positive and exciting.
Is it perhaps the case for those three players that they've had a chance to absorb the bad news from home and now they're going to try and channel that emotion for their own benefit and for the team as well?
Yeah, definitely. We've spoken about that as a bit of extra motivation or channel that and put in a bit more. But we've got the World Cup and just the last couple of days of really being around some full members and the World Cup atmosphere. I think that has got everyone zeroed in and focused on exactly what we've got in front of us now. Everything is real. Everyone's down in the team room getting their media done. You can see the spirits are excited and lifted.
There's going to be quite a lot of attention, I would imagine, on the Papua New Guinea team simply because you've never been involved in a World T20 final series before. So that in itself is another incentive, isn't it? After a difficult build-up, if you're going to shine, then the world stage is surely the best place to do it, isn't it?
Absolutely. And that's the message I've been pushing the whole time. Yes, results haven't gone our way to date and we haven't played good enough cricket as we know we can. But in T20, you only have to get it right on one day. And we've seen flashes of what we expect. Yes, we haven't been good enough for long enough, but there's been periods. Tony Ura has just struck form at the right time. He got a 68 off 40 balls 2 days ago. And that's the kind of thing I'm looking to build on, that momentum. We take that into the round one, game one. You only need a few good performances, and as we know, we're capable of. And all of a sudden, you're right in the mix.
Interesting psychology, though, isn't there, for you as coach? Because you're going to be playing Scotland and Oman, who you've already played several times in the build-up, but without managing to beat them. So maybe, as you suggest, you might catch them on the right day, and maybe they might take you for granted?
I think in the back of their minds, they're of the belief that just don't give us a sniff, because if we get a sniff, we get that door slightly open, we know we can walk or run through it at pace, almost literally. So I think those teams know they've beaten us, but are still wary of what we can do on our day. And I think in the back of their minds, the psychology around that for our group is we have to go into those contests chin up, shoulders back, chest out, almost as if it's part of the plan that we unfortunately haven't won against them. And on that day, we can double down and make up for all those performances that we haven't played as well. And on the world stage in a World Cup, that's what the important games are now.
So what's the atmosphere like over there with just days to go before the start of the World Cup? Is there a lot of razzmatazz?
Yeah, there's definitely plenty of razzmatazz. Although teams are in the bubbles or the biosecure environments, you can just get that feeling as we were playing. South Africa were training, Afghanistan were training, Sri Lanka and Bangladesh played immediately after us, the Netherlands were there. So there was all of a sudden that tournament vibe, you know, to have, what's that, six countries there, three or four full members, all in the space of two cricket grounds. Even our boys, you could start to see them think, whoa, we are really here now. And the big leagues.
Is it intimidating for some of the players? Are they a bit starstruck?
I would have to say it definitely would be for some of them. And that's the experience too. You expect that. And everyone plays a debut game or has a first time in an event. And it's only natural to be starstruck if you see Quinton de Kock on the same field as you, or you see Dinesh Chandimal and you're taking the field with these players that have played international cricket for a long time. And you can sort of see the boys group together and point. Although these other people are used to it, that's part of the charm, I think, in playing in such a big event for the first time.
And for you personally, you hadn't even met your players face to face until you arrived in Oman. You've been together for several weeks now, but it's been hard going on the field. You've had all the personal issues to deal with off the field. So how are you coping with it all?
You prefer to be winning than you do losing, but there's a bigger game at play too. And I haven't actually had a chance to get down and be on the coalface and work with the players as yet. Everything was done online and more relationship building. So it's been a challenge and you're straight into a tournament. So there's only so much you can do in that aspect individually. It's more making sure the team is in a position where we can perform from day to day. So there'll obviously be work post-tournament more on what I've observed from individuals. But for the moment, my focus has just been making sure the mindset and the psychology of everyone is just to be together, to make sure we're giving ourselves the best chance each game. You know, we're fortunate enough that we've had a few games and we've learned from that. And hopefully we just keep taking those learnings in. And when the time comes, we can get as good a performance as we can.
Carl Sandry, coach of Papua New Guinea's men's cricket team, who start their T20 World Cup campaign against Oman in Muscat at 8 p.m. on Sunday PNG time. And the reporter there was Richard Hewitt.
You're listening to Pacific Beat on ABC Radio Australia.
Do you know that sound? Well, don't worry if you said no. You'll hear about it soon because it is time for the Friday Forum. You know the drill by now. Two guests, three stories, roses, thorns, bananas. Let's just get into it. Lefo Ali'i Dion Inari is a lecturer at the School of Sport and Recreation at Auckland's University of Technology and is also a PhD candidate on Samoan culture at Bond University. Talofa Dion.
Alofa lava mala. It's nice to be here.
Lovely to have you. And of course, our second guest, Moana Lelua, is the Player Wellbeing and Development Manager with the Melbourne Rebels. Talofa to you, Moana.
Malo, lovely soifu mala.
Well, we've got to get into it. I guess it's been a bit of a week, so we're going to start with thorn, get it out of the way. Moana, I want to chat to you about your thorn because it's something that has struck a chord in a lot of places around the Pacific. We're talking about Polikefu, you know, and the life imprisonment sentence. Tell me why you chose the story.
I think when we were asked, it was to, around a story that we were really passionate about, and obviously earlier this year, a heinous crime happened in Tonga and Polikefu's life was taken, but he was such a beautiful soul, very much a community advocate for the LGBTQI community, was doing a lot of things, even with the Tonga Ladies Association. And I had just finished Ladies in Waiting, watching that documentary. So to finally see some justice served on the unfortunate and untimely death of such a hero, back in Tonga was great news to hear.
And news, no doubt, that resonated across the region because Polikefu, you know, touched so many people from around, you know, not just in Tonga, but around the Pacific. And Dion, let's head to your thorn story because it's about an unarmed deputy who was shot. Tell me why you picked this story.
Yeah, so it was about a Samoan unarmed officer in the United States by the name of Toa Malama Scanlon. So he had passed away this week after sustaining head injuries from being shot. The reason why I picked this story in terms of my thorn is, you know, there's a lot of anti-cop sentiment from Pacifica communities and Indigenous communities, which are, you know, rightly justified. But I think this story here also just reminded me that there are also Pacifica people on, you know, the law enforcement side as well. And, you know, that, you know, these are Pacifica fathers, mothers, cousins, nephews and sons that also serve on that side too. So yeah, it was quite the timely reminder. Yeah.
Yeah, that is a timely reminder indeed. You know, from the thorn, though, we've got to go to the rose, something to brighten us up a little bit. And Moana, I would love to know more about your story. A teenager in Eagle Hawk in Victoria, you know, had acts of kindness within her community during lockdown. What did she do? Tell me more.
So she had actually wrote some notes and put them on some handmade cards. Wrapped some flowers from her own garden and was either leaving them in letterboxes or putting them on windshields. And it was just because the news that is out at the moment is just all bad news. So she really wanted to lift people's spirits up. So it really has, and something that she wrote at the back is that if you can pass on the act of kindness, then that was her hope. So I just thought it was something beautiful coming out of, obviously, the kind of the chaos that we're living in the present. And it's just something that she was able to, use her beautiful artistic gift, but in the same token, be able to share joy.
And Dion, in New Zealand, you know, there were lockdowns as well, and the situation's been difficult in a lot of places. Have you seen any acts of kindness or, you know, the community rallying together?
Oh, yeah. You know, it's so we're still currently in lockdown here in Auckland, and we see a lot of church groups and a lot of community-based groups delivering food parcels, going in. Yeah, I've really seen a lot of acts of kindness, and it's very humbling. Yeah, so it's still, you know, when I see all those acts of kindness and then to hear the one that Moana said as well, you know, it gives you hope that there's still that, you know, humanity is still alive and well.
Absolutely. And, you know, speaking of humanity being alive and well, Dion, your rose is, you know, it's welcome news as well, because there's a framework to end violence that's been launched in Samoa. Tell me more about this.
Yeah, so, I've picked this as my rose because really excited. This is the first framework of its kind with the Ministry of Police that will look at better ways of ending violence in Samoa. And so, yeah, you know, it's, any step in the right direction is a good step. So I'm really excited to see all of the all their consultations they'll have with the communities and the different government groups to really push this initiative forward. Yeah.
And an initiative, no doubt, that many people will keep their eye across and hopefully can, you know, serve for other places around the world as well. But as we come towards Friday, the weekend, we want to laugh, we want to joke, we want to brighten everything up. So if you both heard that little clip in the beginning of this segment, it is attached to something that has absolutely gone crazy worldwide. Moana, your banana, sorry, is Squid Game memes. I know I've seen tons of them, although just really quietly, I haven't seen Squid Games yet. But that's okay. That's all right.
Me too. You are not the only one. I haven't seen it either.
I don't have to whisper. I don't have to go into hiding. It's fine. But Moana, Squid Game memes. Tell me more.
Well, I feel better. Hopefully there's no spoilers in me sharing this, but obviously in the weekend we had White Sunday, and as you said, it's blowing up globally. But, you know, in preparation for White Sunday, and I'm sure my brother Dion is aware of it, you know, there's rehearsals, and obviously in this case, everything was now virtual. But there is it's essentially about games that 456 people who start off the game play. And there's one game which is similar to what we play in New Zealand. I think we call it freeze, but in the game was called red light, green light. And there are some hilarious memes of mums being the doll, who there's a doll that turns around and, And so just in terms of when we rehearse and then they give us the facials, if for one reason or another we don't get a word right or we miss our part in the play. And there was just so many going around online. It was just hilarious. I just don't want to do any spoilers for you two. You haven't seen it yet.
Well, if people in the Pacific are listening, I'm not sure what we're talking about. Squid Game is a Korean TV show that's been released on Netflix. It has absolutely taken the world by storm. I believe it has surpassed some of the other shows and is one of the most watched shows on Netflix. So, Dion, maybe the next time we talk, we might have both seen it, but, you know, I don't know.
I need to see it because I want to be in the in crowd, you know.
You've got to understand the memes. It's all about the memes.
I've put it down for my weekend watching as Squid Games because I want to fully understand and be a part of the whole phenomena.
Well, Dion, if I text you on Monday going, "Hey, did you watch it?" I'm hoping to get.
I would have already watched it. Don't even. I'm in lockdown right now. There's nothing else to do. It's all right. I would have watched all the Squid Games.
And then we can create a chat and chat about all the memes, send each other. Yeah. That sounds great. And well, Dion, we kind of come to your banana now, and it's the morning, so I am quite hungry myself. So let's talk about it. But keep in mind that I'm very hungry. But we are talking a COVID outbreak, but there's something quite funny about it. Tell me what's happening.
So here in New Zealand, as I imagine in Australia, they're really trying to get the vaccination rates up as fast as possible, and they're really pulling all the stops. Including giving free Kentucky Fried Chicken meals to Pacific families who get the COVID shot. And I think it's why I picked this one and why I think it's really funny is because, you know, there are a lot of people who talked about, you know, anti-vax and they don't want to be vaccinated. But how anti-vax are some of these people when they're throwing when there's a free family feast meal thrown in if you get the jab? And the funny thing is some of my anti-vax friends and family caved because of the free meal.
It just shows how, you know, incentives, they work, especially if it's KFC. Now, okay, I've got to ask both of you. Dion, of course, you know, COVID vaccinations are so important to protect ourselves and our families from the pandemic. But if you could be given any incentive, potentially for the booster, what would you want? And what I'm going to ask you next.
Well, the funny thing is in American Samoa, they're actually offering people $100 each to get the vaccination. So that out of all of the incentives I've seen, I would just want the money. I'll take the bag.
You can buy whatever you want with money. Money is great.
Yeah, exactly.
Moana,
yeah.
If you could pick any incentive, you know, to get a booster or, you know, to spruik the vaccine, what incentive would you want?
I think for me, because we've been in lockdown for so long, we're lockdown six, I haven't been able to, you know, get pampered as I would normally do maybe once every couple of months, like a gift box or a pamper pack. Mm. With at-home stuff, with, you know, instructions on how to do things because, you know. So, yeah, it's that would be something that I personally would like, yeah.
I think you deserve Free it. Pack. I think everyone deserves a pamper pack after the past 2 years. It's been some time, you know, for everyone. But, you know, these incentives bring a great perspective into getting people to get vaccinated. And hopefully, you know, by KFC giving away free food, there's also education around that as to why the vaccine is so important, especially, you know, as countries begin to open up, Australia, Fiji, getting vaccinated is so important. Just to travel, but also, you know, like we said, to keep each other protected. Finally, we've got a couple seconds, well, a couple minutes left, maybe like 2 minutes. So I want to ask, Dion, what are you looking forward to in your weekend?
Squid Games now.
Good answer.
Yeah, see, you were trying to test me, weren't you? Yeah, and I'm just looking forward to relaxing and catching some good sunshine here. Restrictions have eased a little bit, so we can join with another. I think it's 10 people allowed outside with their mask on. Yeah, so gotta find another 9 people to hang out with. Yeah.
That's lovely. And Moana, you are here in Melbourne. We are still in lockdown for the time being, but what are you looking forward to this week and what have you got planned?
I'm working tomorrow, so a little bit of work, a little bit of life admin, and just chill for the week ahead. We've started pre-season, so it's a pretty busy quarter at the moment.
Well, Moana, Dion, thank you so very much for bringing us those stories and for sharing your weekend plans. It is so lovely to have you both on and bring a little joy to the end of the week and start of the weekend. I will be touching base with you, Dion, if you've seen Squid Game. So please have your phone.
I'll be ready for the question. Yeah.
Phone next to you, phone on. You're going to be quizzed because I'm also going to watch it on the weekend. And Moana, I hope work is great. I hope it's not too difficult and you do get a bit of that work-life balance as well. But it's been such a joy. Moana, Dion, thank you so very much for coming on the program and Friday Forumming with me. That was Moana Leilua, the Player Wellbeing Development Manager with the Melbourne Rebels, and Leofa'ali'i Dion Inari, Lecturer at the School of Sport and Recreation at Auckland's University of Technology. And that brings us to the end of Pacific Beat. I'll be back at the same time on Monday. That's 6 a.m. PNG time. But you can also hear us again this afternoon at 3 p.m. PNG time. Stay tuned, though, to ABC Radio Australia across the day. If you've had any thoughts about any of the stories that you've heard, please head on over to Facebook, type in ABC Radio Australia and send me a message. If you want to hear some of the stories back again, you can find our stories on our website. Just type in Pacific Beat and Radio Australia into your search engine. Wanting to say a quick thank you to the team that makes this program possible. Stay tuned to ABC Radio Australia. I'm Marla Damati. Thank you so much for your company and have a safe and wonderful weekend.